T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan newsletter.
Into right center, back of the warning track, the wall, it is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Bernstein and McKnight. Tuesdays, we call it Joe Day. We've got two Joes, Joe Madden at noon with Lawrence Holmes and Joe Sheehan with us right now. He is on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Interesting times for both Chicago teams, Joe. Before we get started with some specifics on some pitchers that you have been looking at, in a nutshell, where is the White Sox rebuild now, considering the injuries, considering the fact that Eloy Jimenez is here and Yoan Moncada is hitting, that we've got some vectors moving in some opposite directions here? What would be your general thumbnail on the White Sox?
I think the injury to Kopech was a setback. It was the kind of thing that almost pushes your timeline back a year. Eloy's injury, it's temporary, it's short term, he's going to be fine. I think the combination of the Kopech injury and then taking this particular offseason off and not going out and adding, I thought this was the winter for them to add the 5-win veteran that would have kind of been the player that a lot of these young players come up around. I think that was a missed opportunity. I think you pushed the whole thing back a year. We've been talking for a while now, Dan, back when you were on the other show, and what's the window for the White Sox? And I thought this was the year where you say, they could be the surprise team. They could be the team that comes out of nowhere, wins 85 games, pushes for the division title. That's not going to happen in all likelihood. So you push that year back to next year and you say, okay, when will they be legitimately good? That's 2021. But again, some of that depends on the health, getting these guys back healthy, both Kopech and Dane Dunning and now Carlos Rodon. And then also looking at, when are we going to go out and add, 10 wins in the market? Because when you develop all of these young players, and your payroll runs so incredibly low because of that, you've got to use that to go out and pay market value for those last 10 wins that you need to get over the top.
Joe, it'd be a deep dive into the organizational philosophy to figure this out, but where would you start to try and understand why so many injuries have popped up to pitchers in an organization that is so good over the last 20 years at keeping pitchers healthy?
To pull this back from the White Sox and just speak generally, particularly when it comes to elbow injuries, the ulnar collateral ligaments that lead to the Tommy John surgery, I have come around to the idea that there's just the tendon is the ligament is what it is, and unless we can actually visualize it, and I'm talking about an 18-year-old when you're drafting was saying how thick is that ligament, how much wear has been put on it. We're always going to be guessing. We do know that throwing very hard is a risk factor. If you look at the highest recorded velocities, the highest average velocities, particularly these are all obviously in recent years, a lot of those guys have had either Tommy John surgery or elbow problems that have come short of Tommy John surgery. I've written about this in the past. Like once you get above an average fastball of 97 miles an hour, the risk factors seem to grow a lot. But I think for a lot of it, guys, we can't know. Until we can actually develop the technology to measure the tensile strength of an ulnar collateral ligament, we're going to be guessing a little bit. And I think there's only so much training you can do. I think we've done a good job of cutting down on shoulder injuries for the most part, but the UCL is just going to snap sometimes, and we just don't have a good handle on how to keep it from doing so.
We just had Ryan Dempster in studio talking pitching, and he was really good discussing some of what John Lester is doing in his old age, an old dog learning some new tricks and pitching maybe a little higher in the zone than he used to, living in a place where the bat barrels aren't. And I am more open than ever to reconsidering my feeling about Lester vis-a-vis the Hall of Fame. But so far, so good this year, even in a way where his peripherals look good, which is rare for old John Lester. What's he doing right? What's going right for him?
You know, this looks a lot more like the guy that we saw 2 years ago. I mean, last year was interesting in that he had the great record, and the area was solid, but he kind of looked at everything else and said, well, he looks like a pitcher in decline. This performance this year is a lot more real. And again, you know, he is doing it, you know, maybe not throwing as hard as a lot of guys do, but he's working that cutter beautifully. He's always had that great cut fastball. He's using it more than he did previously. I'll concede to Ryan's point, I haven't looked necessarily as to where he's pitching, but he's throwing strikes. He's working the cut fastball. I mean, 91 is, for a left-hander, 90-91, you can still live there. There's a velocity gap. You know, for right-handers, you're at 90-91, you get knocked around a bit. But, you know, Lester's had the command, just 8 walks all season. Yeah, he's getting a little bit lucky, guys. He's 4th in baseball in strand rate. You know, when he puts a base runner on, 90% of the time that base runner stays there. That's not likely to continue. But when you actually look at the underlying numbers, you know, it's a 5-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. It's a 2.72 FIP. This isn't a fluke. I mean, 1.16 ERA is a fluke. You know what I mean by that. But he's pitching at the level of a high number 2 starter. He's pitching at the level he did when, you know, the Cubs signed him back in 2015. I don't think the underlying performance is a fluke. I think this is a guy who at 35 still has enough stuff and enough savvy to front the rotation. I'm surprised. I was definitely on the John Lester is about to fall out of the league train 4 months ago, and it's been a pleasant surprise to see him kind of turn it around. The comp I might make here is CeCe Sabathia. CeCe Sabathia fell off a lot more, and he had to reinvent himself more. But when you consider the pitcher that he became a lot like the pitcher John Lester is today, kind of working the fastball and working the cutter. Lester's providing more innings than CeCe did even during his comeback, which is incredibly valuable for this Cubs team.
From one guy on a roll to another, what's Lucas Giolito gotten right from your perspective?
What surprises me, guys, is that, you know, he left the start early in Kansas City and he came back, and I thought we were going to see some changes. I thought that I was going to dig in and go, oh, he's pitching differently. He's the exact same guy that he was pretty much before that. He's throwing more strikes. Like, there hasn't been much of a change in the pitch mix or anything. He's pounding the zone in a way that we haven't seen him do in pretty much his entire career. Just 6 walks in the last 2 starts. Some of that, let's be honest here, the last 2 starts against the Indians and the Blue Jays, and an Indians-Blue Jays combined all-star lineup is probably only going to be average. So he certainly helped there. But as somebody who's been waiting and waiting for Giolito, guys, I've had him on a score sheet team. I've had him on a fantasy team. I've just been saying, hey, this is when he's going to actually pitch well. It's really great to see it. This gets into some stuff we talk about with young players now. We've gotten so used to young players stepping into the league and dominating. You go back to Trout and Harper in 2012, and a lot of the rookies we've seen, Clay Bellinger a couple of years ago hitting 39 home runs, pitchers we've seen come into the league. And the path of a Giolito is actually the more common one. He has the physical tools to get him to the major leagues quickly, but still has to figure out how to pitch at the major leagues. It's 3 starts. I don't want to jump too much on it, but the path here from struggling young starter to breakout is a lot more common than we remember, because we've just gotten so spoiled by these guys who dominate on as soon as they show up.
Let's play Name That Player. This guy has a slash line of, he is batting .272. He is on base .364. He is slugging .583. That's an OPS of .947 and an OPS plus of .152. He's got 10 home runs to lead the team on which Mike Trout plays. What the hell has gotten into Tommy La Stella?
I don't know. I believe it's now as many home runs as he had like the last like 4 years combined or something. It's really fascinating. And, you know, I don't know if he's a launch angle guy, or this is just one of those weird things. You kind of look at the kind of pull up the homer fly ball numbers here. It's funny because in addition to hitting for power, he's also gone back to being the guy who kind of looked like coming up through the Braves system, where he's walked more than he struck out. In today's game, that's actually more impressive than the power. You just don't see that anymore. You don't see guys walk more than they struck out. He's walked 12 times. He struck out just 8 times. Now, the home runs are a bit of a fluke. I mean, he's got 2 doubles. 2 doubles, 10 home runs is kind of an unstable thing here. But the bat-to-ball skills have always been there. I'm not sure that the power's always been there, but I think the ability to hit for a .280, .290 average has. you know, the Cubs decided they wanted to go with Daniel Descalso. I don't know if that was leftover resentment over the didn't want to be demoted thing for Dostal a couple of years ago. The two have been comparable players. Descalso is a better defender. So I really can't complain about the Cubs making this choice, but it's always a great story when a player does this, whether, you know, Justin Turner a few years ago, J.D. Martinez, or even at a lower level, a Tommy La Stella kind of surprising us. You'll hear a lot of, I've heard a lot of it over the years, like, oh, you guys with your stats and your projections, why do they even play the games? We play the games because every year there's a Tommy La Stella who will suddenly improve and shock us. That's why we play the games.
Splashed all over Twitter and on the top of MLB.com is some news regarding the Brewers. The Cubs just got rid of them in a series win, but they've called up their, I believe, their top prospect. I don't know that Corbin Burnes moved himself up to the one spot. Keston Hiura is a second baseman and posed to join the offense. What do we know about this guy, and should this shake the Cubs fans to their boots?
No, he's a good hitter. He's hit every level in the minor leagues. He was a first-round pick a couple years back. UCI, go Eaters. I used to work there. He strikes out a fair amount, and that's actually the one thing I was surprised. He's been able to sustain high batting averages despite a significant strikeout rate. You would expect him to come in and hit pretty well to start with. Of course, we said that about Vlad Guerrero, so let's not go too crazy. He's a second baseman. He's not a particularly good one. Like, this isn't the Brewers have played Travis Shaw and Mike Moustakas at second base, so obviously second base defense isn't a big priority for them. So I don't think they're going to worry about how he feels. They're just going to count on being able to shift him into position. But I think the bat's going to play. I think very much from the start here, you're going to see him hit.
Talking baseball with Joe Sheehan on a busy sports day. Both of the baseball teams are in action. The White Sox and Indians, a 1:10 start. Cubs at Reds, that fabulous time of 5:40 Central, which is just absolutely ideal. Also a busy basketball day with the NBA draft lottery coming up. Going to get back to that talk in just a bit. But Joe, a report has stated that the Cubs are having internal discussions, if not conflict, over where to play Addison Russell, whether or not they would gain enough of a defensive advantage at shortstop to have him there with Javier Baez manning second base. The other side of that argument is don't mess with a great thing. What say you?
Well, the Cubs made this decision a couple of years ago, right? You know, Russell became the shortstop and Baez was turned into a second baseman and then kind of used a third as needed. Obviously, Joe Maddon tends to employ a bit of a team pretzel concept. So, you know, Baez got a lot of innings everywhere. But, you know, Addison Russell was the shortstop. Now, I think there are reasons to not mess with Baez. There's this idea that you don't lose your position because of an injury. I'm not sure that applies here. I think the Cubs have an awkward relationship with Russell right now. I don't think they want to necessarily invest a lot in him, not just from a performance standpoint, but from a non-performance standpoint. So as long as Russell can play second, and he can play second, we know Baez is a plus-plus shortstop. Baez is going to be a plus defender no matter where you put him. I think the safest play for the Cubs is to leave Russell at second base, at least maybe through the end of this season. And you might just decide that's going to be your alignment. But if I'm the Cubs, I don't know how much I want to start messing with the entire team for the sake of Addison Russell. There are just too many unknowns here.
Yeah, with you there. Joe, real quickly before we let you go, Cubs get the first look at the rebuilt Reds. They have a plus 30 run differential. They've scored 30 more than they've given up, and they're last in the NL Central. The run differential is good for second. They're in last. What do you feel about the Reds?
If you tell me one team is under 500 and is going to win 90 games, I'd probably pick the Reds.
Whoa.
I don't think they're going to actually get there, but the problem with the Reds has always been the pitching, and the pitching has actually been fantastic this year. Luis Castillo has taken that big step forward. Guys like Rourke and Gray have stabilized the back end of the rotation, which has been such a disaster for them over the years. Anthony DeSclafani is finally healthy for the first time in like 3 years. It's the offense that's been the problem for them. We expect them to be a very good offense, and you know Joey Votto's really fallen off. They've had to release Matt Kemp. Yasiel Puig hasn't hit. I think the improvement in the pitching is going to hold, and they're going to hit better. The run differential is a better indication of the talent on the Reds than the record actually is. The biggest problem the Reds have, of course, is the Cubs, Brewers, and Cardinals. The Reds could end up being like the 13th best team in baseball this year and only be the 4th best team in that division.
Joe, always great stuff. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
That is Joe Sheehan. You hear him on Joe Day at 10 o'clock, the first of two, on the same day on Tuesdays that Joe Madden joins the Score at noon. We will shift our attention to bouncing balls and the possibilities and probabilities therein for the Chicago Bulls and what's real, what's not, what can be expected. It's a big day for their organization, but it's like getting somebody a lottery ticket as a Christmas gift. You know, it's cute. You can be tantalized by, ooh, I might have gotten you $1 million.
Maybe.
Yeah, but you probably didn't.
No, you didn't. And then you got to clean up the little filings from the thing. That's what you're left with. Every single time you get one of those, you got to clean up that crap.
Basketball talk comes your way next. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Williamson driving in on Taco. And it's going to make the fall as the basket goes. How about that courage? Talk about attacking. Put this team on your shoulder. Big time delivery. How about those onions, Greg?
Zion's more important than me, or you, or even Morpheus.
Dreaming of Zion. Pick on somebody your own size, Zion Williams.
Man.
Is he big enough? Taco Fall,
God,
is he big enough?
Huge a play that was. They were down three.
Yep.
With the ball in the hands of a man who cannot shoot the three, at least not yet, and he takes it to the rack, draws the foul, hits the free throw. Oh, no, missed the free throw, and then Archie Barrett cleaned it up, and Duke took the lead. That was a huge sequence for them. My God.
Could be a Bull if things go right. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. We are Bernstein and McKnight, 9 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday. Very baseball-y to start.
Mm-hmm.
But here you go again. It's 2008 all over again. It's not exactly analogous because in 08, the Bulls already knew that they had the top overall pick. And then they hired Vinny Del Negro.
Mission accomplished. And hang the banner right there on the battleship.
And the rest of the league looked around and said, what? They hired who to be their head coach? Really? They did that? But they had the top overall pick. And that bought them a couple of years, and Vinny had a couple of 500 seasons, and then they moved on because it was time to get a better coach. This time around, the Bulls have already not only made their commitment to their once interim, now permanent coach, but they doubled down on it. They have decided, for reasons that are only clear to them, that Jim Boylan is the guy, and now they're again looking for the distractive value of a top overall pick to buy everybody involved a couple of years.
I'm a man who respects the double down, just the idea of it. You know, whether you're right or whether you're wrong, I'm a man who respects the double down as long as once you're either right or wrong, once that comes up, you accept the consequences of said double down and then have to deal with the new reality of what happened once you put extra chips in the middle of your table, right? I mean, that has to come along with doubling down on this thing. And I don't know where Bulls fans are. I'd love to know how much hope you've allowed yourself when it comes to tonight. 9 hours, 2 minutes, and 5 seconds until the NBA draft lottery tonight. I don't know how much hope you've allowed yourself, but I came up with this last night. I just kind of woke up from a deep sleep and thought, they're going to pick sixth. That's what's going to happen. They're going to pick sixth. If they get higher, that's awesome. The second pick is gold, and the number one overall pick, for me, in my own brain about how I'm allowing myself to feel about that, the number one overall pick is science fiction. Like, it's not happening, but I'm sure a lot of Bulls fans will write fan fiction about what if it did happen. I'm sure some are allowing themselves to dream about what it would be to have Zion on this team, as awkward a fit as it could be, you know, from X's and O's standpoint, or into Jim Boylan's offense, whatever that is. You make that work. You deal with that problem, right? I mean, that's just something you have to accept. When I'm on tankathon.com, Dan.
Love that site.
When I want to do our last tankathon sim as a show here. When should we stop? Let me just sim.
Can't do just one. It's like eating a Jay's potato chip.
You bet you can't have just one.
Is it Lay's or Jay's? I don't know. I'm a Jay's guy.
Bet you can't have just one.
Bet you can't eat just one Lay's.
I think it's Lay's. Okay. Cleveland got the first pick here. Then Washington. Then Atlanta. Then Dallas. That's no good. That can't be our last one.
Cleveland always gets the lottery luck.
They all the time with the lottery luck. all the time.
Just not necessarily in the right year all the time.
No, definitely not that. Oh, see, there's the sixth pick for the Boston again. That's the, oh, there it is. The number one pick. Bulls, New York, Phoenix, Boston with that Sacramento pick they have, Cleveland, Atlanta, Washington, and New Orleans.
You could spin that a bunch of times, a bunch of ways. I'm still dismayed by a lot of what I heard yesterday from Bulls owner Michael Reinsdorf, who's always nice with his time and an affable sort.
Sure.
But we're going to get to that after 11 o'clock on the other side of the Midday Midway and hear some of what he told Mully and Haw about their commitment to Jim Boylan. And I remain very, very, very skeptical of a coach that had that little bit of mutiny.
Just a little bit.
That lost his team, had his team ready to literally quit on him, and then needed an organizational intervention to pound into his head that three is more than two. It took everything. They had to turn an aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's offered that, well, why do you like him? Well, Doug Collins is around. What?
Why you like Jim Boylan?
He talks to other coaches. Okay, better ones, I hope. The ways of, it's sort of like somebody once told me, an NBA scout once told me, that when you hear discussion of a player, he said, well, he's a point guard. If the first thing you hear about him is his court vision, he sucks. I said, what? He goes, I don't want to. He goes, if I'm scouting a point guard,
he goes,
if the first thing somebody talks about is how great his court vision is, what you got is a bad point guard.
That's so great.
I said, okay. And I always tried to keep that in mind. Like when we do who's your guy for football, when we start looking at baseball stuff, if makeup is the first thing in positives, you've got problems there. You know, looks the part. Like when we play the joking bit, it's with Brad Childress talking about Sage Rosenfels.
Right.
You know, what is he? Great, enormous stature.
Really looks like a quarterback.
It looks
out
like
there.
He can see.
He can see. You know, you see that sort of thing. Well, when you're listing the assets, and the asset is assets are talks to other coaches, has Doug Collins around. Or cares a lot, works hard. It's like, it's a head coach. How about brilliant strategist, master motivator?
Sure, all those things would be great.
Relationships. I mean, there are several things on my checklist for coaches that well down the list talks to other coaches, relies on Doug Collins to help him out. Like, I'm just thinking, oh, God.
My cousin played linebacker at the Citadel D2 school, and we went for the freshman game, you know, the kind of welcome to the whole deal. And they had scouting reports. They had created scouting reports for their own players so that people knew who they were looking at and stuff. And one, like the fourth string quarterback up, this is, again, school created. They wrote this down about their players. I kid you not. The first line on this quarterback was, takes a sack well. Like,
nicely done.
Oh, I think the scouting department might have missed on that. No, I'm with you, and especially as it comes to the point guard and how it meshes in with whatever Chris Fleming's new offense is going to be. Fleming's the new head assistant coach for Jim Boylan, and he's got some sort of offensive philosophy. And
does it involve understanding that three is more than two?
I guess he's reported to be the main offensive mind behind the Nets offense this past year.
I know he was
was him.
A savant in Germany. He had a great deal of success.
Comes with a reputation
in the Bundesliga.
Comes with a reputation, and that's all good until Jim Boylan may or may not trust the offense or run the things. I mean, you saw it the last handful of weeks when everybody was hurt and practically dead for the Bulls. We went back to that old stuff that Boylan had run.
Yeah, it's already, this sounds self-defeating, and maybe it is. Maybe it's just the sort of defines where we are. But I don't, as much as I love Robin Lopez and think Robin Lopez is good, I don't want them to re-sign Robin Lopez because I worry about Jim Boylan wanting to throw the ball to Robin Lopez in the post so he can shoot hook shots.
Chris Fleming needs to have like a little spray bottle so whenever Jim Boylan wants to go touch the offensive board, just like, no.
Yep.
No. And just spray him in the face. So he's like the dog that has to, the road dog, that has to just wipe off his face.
Or like, what is the smoker thing the beekeeper uses? The little just little puffs of smoke to keep the bees docile. You move them away. Jim,
right in the middle of an interview. Has a shock collar on him.
Jim, move away from the offense. Don't go anywhere unless you talk. You have to talk to Doug. Doug, you can bring Jim over here, but don't let him near it. Yeah, I'm willing to give Chris Fleming a chance to make his imprint.
I hope that Jim Boylan is as well.
Dave is in Crown Point, and he's on Bernstein and McKnight on the Score. Hi, Dave.
Hey, guys. Hey, Dan, I got a confession to make to you first.
What?
I worked for the Score for a little bit in between jobs, and first time I met you, you called me Newt Gingrich, and I was kind of upset that day, very much so. But ever since you guys have gotten together, I really enjoy you, Dan, and I just wanted to tell you that off the bat. So
thank you, Dave. It's nice of you. I can't say I remember that, but you probably come by it honestly.
But what's the difference between college coaching and professional coaching?
Are you asking regarding John Beilein?
How's it going to happen in Cleveland? Well, how come it couldn't happen in Chicago?
It's a tall order for a guy like John Beilein. John Beilein is a professor. He's a teacher.
He's one of the best in college basketball.
He's the essence of professorial style. He has a way of doing things, and I have no idea if it's going to translate because he doesn't. You know, Michael Rosenberg of Sports Illustrated wrote a wonderful piece about this. He's a very talented writer and a nice guy who wrote a great piece about this. And he said the difference between Tom Izzo and a guy like Beilein is Izzo is a paternal sort of relationship builder. Like, you want to please him. You want to run through a wall for him.
We saw that in the tournament.
Yeah, just how he reacts to guys and tough love and that kind of thing.
Kind of weird, but we saw it in the tournament.
And that's Izzo. But there is a... There is a distance that Beilein maintains. The players don't know him well. That's really hard to do in the NBA. Hmm. It's really hard to be an instructor because there's so much more to it. I'm rooting for John Beilein because he's so well regarded. But the piece that Rosenberg wrote, and Dave, it's a good question you ask, and thank you for calling. And you probably do look like Newt Gingrich. Or you have similar policies.
Or you have a golden microphone.
Right,
or something.
You also designed the contract for America. I don't know. But it says something about what college basketball is evolving into when somebody like Beilein might even feel more comfortable trying his hand in the pros. It's not really a place for teachers the way it used to be.
You know what I didn't realize? Well, I knew this but didn't know it. And when the news broke yesterday that Beilein was taking the Cavaliers job, he's 66 years old. Like I knew that he had put in a whole lifelong work into coaching. I didn't 66 is it? I mean, that's a 5-year deal that puts him into his 70s, 71 by the time it's done. That makes him, I think, the third oldest coach in the NBA when he grabs the whistle for the first Cavs practice this year. The third oldest coach, and he's the newest hire.
This segment's brought to you by Grandview Homes. Grandview Homes will buy your home today. GrandviewHomes.com for more info. Wow, look at this. Is this a nice text?
Probably not. You could be reading it wrong.
Now the 815 says, yeah, you're cool now, Dan. I used to hate you.
Does it say that exactly?
Well, it says I used to hate your face.
Yeah, thank you. I just don't know why we're editing on the text line.
Well, I didn't quite understand what he can still hate my face but think I'm cool.
Nice of your wife to text a show.
That's okay, but if anything close on the text line, anything close to anything other than I'm going to burn your house down and kill your family,
well,
I'll take it. So we'll take that.
We get that a lot. Facebook
my text thing.
Yeah, stop sending texts, Rick Camp. By the way, later in the show, we have the ultimate lottery breakdown coming
that we
from
do.
Rick Camp. This has been you will not want to miss this.
Rick's our NBA guy.
Probably like an hour from now.
Yeah,
is around
say.
When we're going to do it, and he's put together a production piece that tells you every single thing you need to know about possibilities and probabilities about tonight's draft lottery.
That'll be later on in the day. The Midday Midway is on the way. 11:20, Richard Deitch of The Athletic and Fan 590 and Sportsnet. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of media stories there. There's a lot cooking, especially as it regards your sports betting.
Yeah, we'll hear for the Michael Reinsdorf stuff that we were alluding to also after the top of the hour. But coming up next, I have a 27-year-old who is a hero to all of us. An absolute hero. I would say American hero, but he's not American. But this is someone who needs to be saluted and possibly jailed. And also the ultimate evolution of political advertising.
A fast food surprise and Bill Nye went dark. The Midday Midway is on the way. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
the first half or the second half. You know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Get used to this new time for the Midday Midway. It will be coming your way at 10:40 Monday through Friday.
That's right.
On the first portion of the show, we had a lengthy conversation with Ryan Dempster. Talked baseball with him. We discussed the White Sox. That led us into Joe Sheehan. Got all kinds of baseball information from him. And then also talked about tonight and the Bulls and what's at stake and what it means.
Yeah, we're going to get back to a little baseball, too. Ryan Dempster said something I absolutely loved as it pertains to Yu Darvish, the struggling member of that rotation. We'll let you know what that was and kind of work that back a little bit, too. So, big fast food guy here, at least in a previous life. Big Taco Bell guy. Lived next to the one, ran right around Wrigley Field or so, and made my dalliances with that pretty well known. However, in Florida, one woman visiting T-Bell came back with something pretty crazy in a Fiesta salad. She orders, lovely preparation, you know, the whole thing. The Fiesta, it's the one with the tortilla bowl kind of thing, and the salad's inside there. You kind of mix that around,
and
break it up,
again?
That sort of thing. Florida.
Was it an alligator?
No alligators.
Oh.
No alligators, no yoga pants,
Python.
No local news. Instead of cinnamon twists.
Monitor lizard.
She opened the box to reveal a box cutter.
All right.
So a weapon had been slipped into the Taco Bell box. And
well, it's not inherently a weapon.
It could be. Yeah, you're right. It is not inherently a weapon.
No,
it could have been used
to
open that box.
Correct. It is a box cutter. It has a purpose
that's
other
true.
Than being a weapon.
And that's absolutely true. The members at the Taco Bell told her, "We're sorry, it must have just fell in there." Which I don't like. Is it raining? I don't. They're just falling from the sky and from distances. I don't. It's very strange. Taco Bell has issued an apology. Team members at this restaurant will be retrained on proper storage and safety procedures. I assume for everything and not just box cutters.
While we're talking fast food, a 27-year-old student was arrested in South Africa for eating at KFC for free for a year. He told employees that he was sent from the KFC headquarters for a quality check. The man's name has not been disclosed. He was a student at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa. He ate free every day for a year.
Oh!
From different KFC outlets by repeating the same story every time.
You're right. He's a hero.
Every single time he would walk into a KFC with a lot of confidence and tell the employees he was sent from KFC headquarters for quality assurance of the food served in the restaurant. This news was shared by a Kenyan journalist on his official Twitter account. And he said, "The head office sent me here to taste if it's up to standard." And Twitter's having fun with this, obviously, but I'll be damned. The brazenness. It's one thing to get away with it once. It is another thing every single day for a year. I'm back for another quality test. I'm not certain.
I haven't had it. You got to try it.
Yep, you never know.
Smashed potatoes might not be up to snuff. I got to have.
Well, that is, if there is one thing at KFC that is superior to other things, if they had to submit something for awards, the mashed potatoes and gravy is their thing that is special.
This is the Midday Midway. We are back to sports in just a couple. For instance, Michael Reinsdorf had some comments with the Mully and Haw show yesterday, and we will bring them to you in just a couple. But one of my childhood heroes and teachers, really, was Bill Nye the Science Guy. You aware of Bill Nye when he was doing his thing?
Yes, sure.
Okay, so Bill has taken a little bit of a career turn. He's got a podcast going that's one of the most downloaded podcasts, I think, in his realm. Jay and Rick were big Bill Nye guys. He was on the John Oliver show the other night and helped, like Bill Nye does, helped explain some complicated things like carbon taxes. Take a listen.
Carbon emissions are by far the largest source of greenhouse gases. Yet right now, it's basically free to pollute the air with carbon dioxide. Now, carbon pricing is a little complicated, so to break down the logic behind it, I've enlisted the help of a guy who's made a career out of explaining complex ideas with fun visual stunts.
Hi, John. Bill Nye, the science guy here. I'm going to explain the complicated logic behind carbon pricing. But first, safety glasses on. When something costs more, people buy less of it. Safety glasses off. That's it.
Wait, that's it? Oh, I mean, honestly, I was expecting something a bit more fun and visual than that, Bill. Could you maybe explain the long-term impact of carbon pricing, but with a cool stunt, you know, to jazz up what you're saying? Go on.
Okay, safety glasses on. When we release carbon, say by burning coal or driving an SUV, all of us pay for that in the form of things like fires, floods, and crop failures. Putting a fee on carbon creates incentives to emit less carbon. And because for some reason, John, you're a 42-year-old man who needs his attention sustained with tricks, here's some Mentos and a bottle of Diet Coke. Happy now?
So it's getting dark. Yeah. Something's gotten to Bill Nye, asked to explain a simpler prospect to the audience. It got even weirder.
Here, I've got an experiment for you. Safety glasses on. By the end of this century, if emissions keep rising, the average temperature on Earth could go up another 4 to 8 degrees. What I'm saying is the planet's on fire. There are a lot of things we could do to put it out. Are any of them free? No, of course not. Nothing's free, you idiots. Grow the up. You're not children anymore. I didn't mind explaining photosynthesis to you when you were 12, but you're adults now, and this is an actual crisis. Got it? Safety glasses off.
It's like Rex Ryan.
It's getting dark out there.
Go grab a snack.
It's getting dark.
But way to go, last Bill. Beep was MF.
Yeah, it's the old MFers.
Nice.
It's Bill Nye, everybody.
While most of the candidates for Denmark's general election are making good use of the internet, posting their promises on websites and social media, one has gone a step further. Joachim B. Olsen, an Olympic shot put silver medalist who's been a member of the center-right Liberal Alliance since 2011, placed an ad bearing his party's logo and encouraging people to vote for him on Pornhub.
Oh.
On his official Facebook profile, Olsen confirmed that he was responsible for the ad. He said, "Yes, it's me on Pornhub." And I say, why not?
Hello.
If we
No.
No.
It's a different
No, that's a different hub. That's not well, I can't speak for, I can't say that for sure. But look, we know that's where the eyes are. We know that actual data, the whole explosion of the internet, the increase in bandwidth and computing speed in large part was due to porn.
Technology follows porn. It was VHS over Betamax, right? That was the decision the porn industry made. Yeah. And that's even though Betamax was a superior technology.
Correct. That was because of the porn industry. And if that's where the eyes are, why not?
Is that how we pick Blu-ray over DVD? Or didn't Blu-ray have a competitor? Wasn't there something going up against Blu-ray as we were evolving from DVD?
I do not remember that. I do remember the Betamax VHS wars of the mid to late 70s, because that was a thing when you'd go to the video store.
Laserdisc never had a chance.
You'd go to the video store and it would be in both formats, but if one was out, if that movie was out, you were out of luck.
Was it noticeably better, Betamax over VHS? Because we only, you know, we went to the family video or whatever.
Well, industrially, it was.
See what you mean.
Back when I was working at Channel 2 and those cameras were in, like, pro beta.
Gotcha.
And then it was SVHS and all this stuff. But no, I mean, I remember going to the video store and either your movie was there or it was not there.
There's still the childhood, where I have probably $80 in late fees from renting a whole bunch of, like, MLB All-Star, you know, 2000 or whatever it was. It's still there. There are towns in America where there are still video rental stores stand and thriving, and I don't know how the business model works anymore. I have no idea how it happens.
They're still getting it done. I would say if you are a candidate and you know there are people, you could get your message, why not put it there? If that's where the eyes are, if there's some value there, go ahead.
Had the final count on a story we brought you in the Midday Midway a couple of weeks ago. Authorities in Curaçao announced Saturday that 17 crew members and 11 passengers must stay aboard a ship owned by the Church of Scientology that is under quarantine.
Still.
Following a confirmed case of measles. It is 17 crew members and 11 passengers. The remaining crew members and passengers, which totaled 318, were free to leave the ship over the weekend. They're not a threat to anyone anymore. The church said in a statement that the health authorities in Curaçao had acknowledged the Free Winds, that's the name of the ship, for its strict isolation protocol. So good job there. You were able to get that done. According to the church's website, the ship is home of a religious retreat ministering the most advanced level of spiritual counseling, but we forgot to check for measles.
And that is the Midday Midway that we bring to you at 10:40 on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. The first-place Cubs, if you haven't noticed, added a half a game to their lead, and they remain up in the Central. The first time they're seeing the Central rival Reds. The Cubs are in Cincinnati. A 5:40 start tonight on the Score with Kyle Hendricks going up against Tanner Roark. Or Rourke, depending on how you say it, Roark. The Indians at the White Sox this afternoon. Carlos Carrasco, Manny Benuelos. We've got giveaways. Got $1,000 cash to give away. Pair of tickets to see the Cubs and Phillies. We got Richard Deitch at 11:20. But coming up next, we're going to hear the Bulls owner in his own words, helping to frame what is going on tonight, as it's a big day for the Bulls' future. So we'll talk about all of it. Keep it here. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.